Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Allison in Wonderland Mental Health Podcast. I have a very special guest today who has dealt with my crazy scheduling conflicts and is joining me from the West Coast while I'm on the East Coast. So I'm a little tired because it's 5 and I turn into a pumpkin early, but we're going to see how this rolls. So I'm going to let our very special guest introduce herself, and we're going to talk about boundaries and relationships and just how we take care of ourselves today. So, Marisol, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. My name is Marisol Moran. I'm a certified life coach, and I've been coaching for 3 years now, almost 3 years. And my main focus in the work that I do is relationship with self. And most, I guess, pertinent to that in the work that I do is self-esteem work, confidence work as well. That's sort of the foundation of what I do. We are one system, one person, so other elements do come into play every once in a while. But that is the focus.
That's wonderful. The world of life coaching, it seems like everyone has their main focus, and then they have obviously other things kind of come up in it, which is great to have this community where we're all connecting with each other. So I absolutely love that. And I love that you help people with their self-esteem because I just know growing up, that was an area that I really struggled with. And I'm only just now kind of coming into my own. I'm like, hey, I'm 40 years old, and now I feel like I can be me. Like, so it's like I finally gave myself permission to let that freak flag fly. I think it's really great work. I know that we want to talk about boundaries and relationships, and I think that that's amazing. I think that a lot of us come up with issues where we kind of give in on our boundaries, and it takes a toll on us. And it can either be because, our saboteurs are like the people pleasers or things like this, or you feel guilty if you don't give in. And I know that I've struggled with that a lot, being the oldest of 8 kids. And it's just like kind of just being built into that mindset of I'm supposed to take care of everyone and then actually setting a boundary. So I would love to hear, how that's been coming up and showing in your life and in your patients' lives and things like that.
Yeah, so that is something that is a huge part of what I do. And it's almost like a form of people pleasing, I guess, for lack of a better term, because it can come from different areas. So you already mentioned too of like feeling kind of guilty of not doing something, kind of like maybe being pressured, and we kind of just fawn and we just go along with it. And that can come up in multiple areas of life, personal, professional. I've known many people in my own career who just can't say no and just keep taking on projects and tasks. And then they're working till midnight, working on Saturdays and Sundays. But also, again, like you mentioned, the older sibling who is taking care of everybody. Or what I've also seen, like culturally, like my mom was raised to, even though she was, I think she's the second oldest, she's one of five, and she's the only girl. So she was raised to take care of all of her brothers. So while they were out being kids, she was doing dishes and folding all their laundry and stuff. And now she's coming into her own with setting boundaries. And like a lot of people pleasers tend to be like, well, I don't care what they think. I'm just going to be mean. I'm just going to like be the evil person. When really they're just setting healthy boundaries. So we see that come up from different avenues, but eventually having the same result of finally setting those boundaries and starting to take care of yourself instead of burning yourself out.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting, I'm actually my brother that passed away was actually the oldest, but I was the oldest girl. So I always say I was the oldest because I did take on all of those responsibilities where the caregiving responsibilities just very naturally fall to the girls, I think, a lot of times. And so it's just easier to say I'm the oldest because it's very much like with your mom's situation. I was the oldest girl and I helped do all of the things. And I think then it became an expectation. And also, I would over-volunteer myself. And then I got to a point to where people that I have in my life just kind of expected the things that I was going to do. So it was just like, oh, you're going to throw and organize this party for me, which I would have loved to do, but could you have at least asked me? It's definitely taken time in my life to get to where I'm like, okay, I'm not a bad person by saying, whoa, I've got too much on my plate.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the things that I also like to point out, and whether it's through these types of platforms or even one-on-one with clients of mine, is that the other person is not always the bad guy. Like, are there times where someone is like purposefully trying to take advantage of you? Yes, like those people exist and they're out there. But sometimes we also like feed into this role by always saying yes and by always accepting. And then the other person just thinks, oh, this is like, we've set the precedent for the relationship and the dynamic. So they think it's okay. And that's where setting the healthy boundaries comes into play, even though it can be very scary, especially when you're first starting to do so, because now you're changing the dynamic of the relationship. And, but once we are able to do that and like have that communication, I firmly believe it builds stronger relationships, because one, we are able to see, oh, like I'm able to express myself and be vulnerable and let them know that actually I would prefer if you would just give me, like, at least give me 2 weeks or give me a week in advance or whatever your time limit is, so that I can fit this into my schedule and actually plan it, because maybe I do enjoy doing those things. And then we get to see, oh, the other person is respecting our boundary, which right. lets us know that the other person does love and care for us. So it kind of just keeps building that connection.
Yeah, I think it's a really great point where it's the, I may have conditioned people in my life to just know I'm going to hop in and take over. And they may also not feel like they're happy with that. I mean, they may feel like I'm coming, I go in and take over and I just go headstrong. I'm in a life coaching group right now, and I jumped right in and I was the pod leader. And then I was like, hey, ladies, just in case, y'all know, I was just trying to get us organized. If y'all don't want me to be the pod leader, if you want to rotate, because I dialed back and I was like, whoa, I just, because I wanted to get the things done on the days that they needed to be done. So I just jumped right in. And then I had to pull myself back, realizing that it was a group of strong, confident women and that, you know, I probably could have relied, you know, on them. And they were fine with me having jumped in the way I did, but I did want to make sure that I'm not just railroading people and then feeling, oh my gosh, they want me to do everything. So
That's so true. And I feel like that's one of the beautiful things of this aspect of relationships. And because we have to get to know ourselves first to know how we tend to operate, whether that's coming from a healthy place, or maybe it's just kind of like one of our personality traits and how we tend to be, whatever it might be, becoming aware of it. And then also bringing that to the table and doing exactly what you did. Like, I know I behaved in this way and did these things, but do you actually want me to be in the leadership position, or should we have it, you know, in some other way? That's wonderful. And sometimes we have to get to know ourselves first, because we all have blind spots. As much as I like to talk about self-acceptance and self-awareness, I'm positive I have blind spots and I don't know what they are. That's the whole point. But with the more we explore, the more we are open to healthy feedback, we get to learn a little bit more about ourselves.
Yeah, that's great. And I know that it's not only boundary setting in, you know, our families. So we've got, I imagine you work with a lot of young professionals that are, you know, building their careers. And I know that I talk to young professionals, and especially women, and they're dealing with imposter syndrome, and they're accepting every single task given to them at work. And they feel like they're going to fail at their career if they're not working 50 times harder than everyone else. So how do you kind of approach those boundaries that you have to set with work, but also not advise someone to tank their career? Because I know after working in marketing for 20 years, I felt that way very much until this last year, where I was like, forget it. I'm not climbing this ladder anymore. But I probably wouldn't have been as burnt out if I hadn't constantly thought that I had to work 10 times harder than everyone else.
Yeah, that is something that has come up and something I definitely think about a lot. It is dependent upon the environment that the person is in. And I say that meaning like how they approach the situation. So if you are in a healthy work environment where you can very easily set up a meeting with your supervisor and tell them, there's a lot on my plate right now. I don't know how I'm going to get all this done. Can we find a way to make this more sustainable? And they're going to be open to that conversation. Wonderful. Let's just figure out how to maybe build your confidence to do that. Perfect. Other times we might realistically fear some sort of like retaliation, or maybe whatever. It's just not a healthy work environment. So we have to be a bit more tactful on how we go about these things. And that's fine. But I would say the most important thing is to figure out how to have that conversation, because ultimately that's what needs to be done. And sort of like the approach is going to be the most important aspect. So if that's saying, I want to get all this work done and I want to do it well, what's the priority? Which project is most important for me to complete first, or whatever that might be, so that you're still able to do all the work, but in a more sustainable timeline. So I would think the approach would probably be the best depending on your work environment.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I also think, you know, coming from a manager position in corporate America, if I had someone come to me and say, I don't want to delegate these tasks, I want to do them, what's the priority, and sit there and like sort out the priority for that, like with them, I would love that. I know that not everyone's that way. So, but I think that would be great. But I also would be like, okay, well, maybe these other two things that are the end of the priority list, we can give them to this person who maybe doesn't have as much. And so I think that I've always been really big on capacity planning and trying not to overwork people, but that's obviously not the way every company works. I know that a lot of times it's the people that are the best at their jobs end up having to do the most work because people keep giving them things. You don't get a 4-hour work day because you get your stuff done twice as fast.
Right. You get more work because you do your work well. Right. I've heard people say that, like, I feel like I'm being punished because I'm efficient or because I do a good job. And that as a manager, I'm sure that's difficult to maneuver. But again, I kind of feel like that goes back to like building the confidence piece, because another aspect that I wanted to touch on is that sometimes it's like, and I've witnessed this myself, where it's scary for people to speak up because they're living paycheck to paycheck. So they're just like, I don't want to rock the boat because I don't want to lose my paycheck.
Right.
And that is a very real fear that I know so many people experience. And that's when we need to have a very vulnerable conversation with ourselves. And think about, what is it that we really want to do right now? Do we want to say something and work through that fear, move with that fear, probably like feel the fear and march forward with it and be brave and courageous? Or do we want to just let it be and focus more energy on finding another job? And that is also a very real option, because sometimes we are too afraid to rock the boat, and I get it. Sometimes we just need that paycheck. So I want to leave room and space for that as well, as another finding other avenues to be creative to sustain ourselves, basically.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I think most of America is living paycheck to paycheck. It's not the normal to not be. I think that we see these people that have all of this extra money and they're doing investments and things, and we kind of compare ourselves and think, oh, well, I'm never going to be there. But I think most Americans, when you're looking at the grand scheme of things, are living paycheck to paycheck, and they have people to support. And if a tire goes flat, that's a huge deal. And if they lose their job, if it takes 2 weeks to find another one, that's 2 weeks. That's very difficult. I definitely understand that. And I talk to people a lot that are like, oh, well, I can't lose my job. And so I am of the focus of sometimes seeing what the next good thing could be helps. So if you do your work during the day and then you kind of flip through jobs on LinkedIn on your phone at night, you're looking at how you may be able to improve. And, you know, I did that when I moved up to Kentucky, to our mountain, was I lived in this horrible little HOA neighborhood where they would measure their grass. And 2 years before we were even going to be ready to move, I would look at Zillow listings for farms all day, like on my phone at night. So just kind of that thing to look forward to. So it's like, you don't want to discount the fact that they do need to pay their bills. But then there are steps they can take. And I think that the, you know, self-confidence when you're interviewing is a huge deal. I mean, I can talk in an interview easily, but there are so many people that are so much smarter than me that might not get the job because they don't have that confidence or they don't have the EQ. Their IQ is so high. And I think it's such a disservice to them that the interview process is so built around the personality and the self-confidence that you carry into it.
That's so true. I've had this conversation a lot with different individuals, not just in a coaching environment, but also just like in life. And one of the things that I've kept hearing a lot, like it took me a long time to move past the meritocracy and like it's a meritocracy, whoever's best for the job is going to get it. Like I firmly believe that's so bad. So it took me a while to really hear and accept when people would tell me that when you go to an interview, like you qualify for the job. Like they chose you because they thought that you fit the job description and would do a good job. The interviews are just to see if they like you. And maybe that's not true everywhere you go, but there's a lot of validity in that statement. And you're right. It's unfortunate that that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, especially now that it's great that everyone's paying attention to corporate culture. But then when they're hiring, it's also very much, are you a culture fit? So it might not even be about your personality, but it's, does your personality fit with the personalities we already have? And I think that that's kind of a struggle as well, where it's like, oh, well, I know this person on the team would not get along with them. So it is a struggle, but I think that helping people, meeting them where they're at in an interview makes more sense. So I've interviewed people that were obviously very nervous and I start cracking jokes and, you know, things like that to try to relax them. And I think that's where being in Zoom or in person helps, because you can get those facial responses, but helping them get through the door and feel comfortable is really important.
I think that's fantastic. I tend to work with people who are on like the opposite end as like the interviewee, not so much the interviewer. But I think that's wonderful. I think that there is a lot of work and a lot of good work that can be done by people who are already in that environment, who are doing the interviewing, who are doing the managing, and not so much the person who is the employee or coming into the interview. At the same time, this is where I feel like that confidence building piece comes into it. Because you mentioned earlier how like it is so nerve-wracking, or maybe you don't feel confident, even though you are very intelligent and you fit the role well, like you could succeed in the role in the position. That's one of the things that I often, again, this is one of my passions that I don't actually get to talk about too often. But when it comes to that aspect, the building the confidence piece in for that interview process as well. I know that in this space, we often talk about it's not a one-way street. You are also doing the interviewing. Like they're looking for a good employee. You're looking for a good employer. Like, are you going to be able to function well and even thrive in this environment? And it's one thing to say that and know that. It's another thing to have that confidence of like, I'm also trying to figure out who you are and how do you operate? And that's a whole different level of presence as well. And it takes, I think, different things for different people. So like in my position, I feel like I've had so many jobs that I eventually just ended up really not liking, to put it lightly. And I now feel like if I'm ever in the position now where I need to go back to the 9 to 5 or anything in that nature, I feel so fed up with negative and unhealthy environments And I feel like I personally am at such a place where I am protecting my peace and my mental health so adamantly that like I'm going to walk into that interview and I'm going to be professional, but also, who are you? How do you operate? What's the work culture like? How would your employees describe you? Like, you know, more professionally, but also like I need to know if my mental health is going to be okay and not deteriorate because of this work environment.
And I think that from a hiring manager side, when they're like, do you have any questions? I obviously have known when someone just Googled, like, what questions should I ask in an interview? And it's always like, what's the room for advancement? How do you see this position growing? And I'm usually to the point where, yes, I want people to grow in a role, but I also want you to be interviewing for the role that you're interviewing, not talking about what can we do for you in the future when I haven't seen you work. I like it when they come in with those questions, because in my mind, it doesn't seem like you're just going to accept whatever is the top dollar offer, which means they're not a flight risk if they're actually picking the company that's right for them. And when we've gone through this great resignation, it was something that I really, when I was having to constantly interview people, I did not want the people that were hungry for any job. I wanted the person that was hungry for that job because they felt like it was a fit for them. I don't think I'm the norm when it comes to hiring managers, but I think that the culture, I think the world's getting there. I think that as the next generation of managers are being trained, we're getting to that place. So understanding what those questions should be as far as like how you're going to fit and like how your heart is going to feel at the end of the day, or is it soul sucking? I think that that's so much more to take away from an interview than, well, how am I going to get to the next position?
Right. And I think that's incredibly just like wonderful, because I from my personal experience, I don't think I've ever really met a manager in terms of my full-time work, my part-time work. Yes. But in terms of my full-time work, who like really was looking for that and mindful of that. But I think that's also where like the boundaries and all that does come back into play. Because one of the fastest things that leads to burnout is the lack of boundaries, because we're constantly working. Where I've done it myself, where I'm working after hours, I'm staying late in the office. It's a Saturday and I'm working on something because I feel like that's what my environment is demanding of me, or I have so much work that like I need to do this or else I'm going to fall behind, and then it's going to be my fault, and then, you know, maybe I'll lose my job or whatever it is, that fear that's there. But I think that if more this sort of like movement I've also been seeing online, where people are setting boundaries in the workplace, but also managers are mindful of their teams, and that their teams are human beings with lives outside of work.
Yeah. And that they have jobs to pay for those lives.
Exactly. That they have other commitments. They have other things they need to do, not just work all the time. I think that's also an important component to what's coming. And I honestly, my personal opinion is that it also raises morale and productivity.
So it hinders my mental health to not check my emails over the weekend. But I've learned that it doesn't set the team up in a healthy way if they see me replying to clients. It doesn't set realistic expectations if I'm replying when it's after business hours. So I'll schedule messages. I'll reply to emails, but I'll schedule them for Monday morning. And I also wake up super, super early, and I just assume that everyone has like Slack muted on their phone at night or certain times. Well, now I have an alarm on my phone that tells me that it is an okay time to send people messages. So I know that, because I'll get up and I'll start sending them. And I realized that I was trying to do what was healthy for me by doing the work when I was super sharp and wanted to, but to other people, they were waking up to 20 messages. And so I've tried to dial it down. And now what I tell people when I work with them and we've got Slack or Hangouts or whatever kind of chat, I'm like, delete the app from your phone while you're on vacation. delete email from your phone and then put it back on there is usually what I recommend them, because I know for me, I'm going to check it if it's on my phone, no matter where I am.
Yeah, that's incredibly just wonderful. Like, again, like that self-awareness, because what is good for you and healthy for you to do, like, it's having perhaps an unintended consequence on the employee. Because yeah, who wouldn't be there? Like, oh, my boss is sending me 20 messages by the time I wake up. Like, no, but what do I, like, I need to respond to this now, even though you don't go into work for like another hour.
Yeah.
So I completely understand what you were saying, like that self-awareness again, sort of like laying the foundation for your professional relationships with your team, with your staff, of like, this is who I am. This is the effect that I may be having on them. So what can I do to set everybody up for success and for ease? Because one of the things that I recognize is that like work is always going to be stressful. Like, there's bound to be some, whether it's workload or the type of work that you're doing, there's going to be stress. So as a manager, if I can minimize or like mitigate as much as possible, fantastic. Because I know that the team is already going to be stressed with an upcoming deadline or maybe
a difficult client.
Right. If you're in marketing, yeah, difficult clients. So yeah, that's phenomenal that you were able to recognize that and then adjust.
Well, it wasn't overnight.
It never is. That's the other thing that, like, when it comes to coaching, there are a lot of people who talk about having like radical transformations in short amount of times, and it is possible. I don't want to knock it. It definitely is possible. I have found that like sustainable shifts tend to happen a little bit more slowly. And it's something I talk to my clients about as well, that if you've been feeling or thinking about yourself for a certain way for like the last 10, 20 years, it's not going to go away in a month.
It's so like it's fad diets. You lose 30 pounds, but like as soon as you stop the diet, you gain 50.
Right, exactly. So it's the same thing with this. Like, maybe it took a little bit to like recognize what was happening, but yeah, it happens. It takes time to recognize these things, and then you adjust once you do recognize it.
So that all brings it back to the relationship with yourself. So you have to have that healthy relationship with yourself in order to know what the healthy boundaries are in each relationship that you have.
Exactly. It's a bit of a two-way street, which I love that we've been able to talk about it from this lens, because I often talk about it from the other, of like, know yourself so you can set the boundaries, so you know, like in dating, what the standards are and like what you're looking for. But also from the way you've been bringing it up, it's what's the effect we're having on people and knowing ourselves in that way. Because, I mean, it's a relationship. They're two-way streets. People affect us, we affect them. And being aware of maybe unintended consequences of maybe our personality or our habits, what they might be doing to other people. And then also being receptive when people do say, oh, like you're sending me all these emails or these text messages early in the morning. I wake up to anxiety when I see them. Yes. And can we just, like, I love hearing from you, but can you please, like, after like 9 or 10?
Right.
Like, okay, great. Cool. Let me adjust how I then approach communication with this person.
Yeah, this whole conversation's made me rethink. There's this part of my coaching business that I want to do that's interview improv, which is basically to help people feel more comfortable on interviews. But now it seems like we need interviewers to also be a part of that and see what could be improved to make that interview process better. It's like both sides need to know what, you know, exactly where they're coming from, because the interviewer also doesn't need to Google a bunch of questions and be like, how long have you been using Google Analytics? And what do you do with a Facebook pixel?
That's true. I've heard people with like horror stories of like weird questions, random questions the interviewers came up with.
Yeah.
That the interviewers themselves Googled right beforehand.
It's great. Well, I think this is great. And I know I always take everybody off topic a little bit. Was there anything you wanted to talk about today that we didn't cover?
I think that we were able to cover it in a very beautiful and new way. And honestly, one of my passions that I don't talk about often is organizational leadership and management. So the fact that it came up makes me so happy.
That's exciting. Well, thank you so much. Would you like to tell the audience how to get in touch with you for your coaching and all of the interweb things?
Yeah. So you can find me at my website, which is marisolmoran.com. You can also find me on Instagram, on TikTok, and just recently on Lemonade. I'm trying it out. It's a brand new app that I heard about on TikTok. All of the handles for all three of those are Your Coach Mari, and that's M-A-R-I. And through those avenues, you can just click the link and be able to schedule a call with me for free. So the consults are free and 30 minutes.
Wonderful. And I'll make sure we link all of those things. And now I have to figure out what Lemonade is. So it was really great. Thank you so much for joining the Allison in Wonderland podcast.
Yeah, thank you as well.